designed to convey a Christian worldview.
All right, it's my pleasure to introduce to you today Dr. Robert Delmay. And he is a professor at Clearwater Christian College and has been a teacher in fundamentalism over the past 50 years. And so I have the privilege of interviewing him today. And Dr. Delmay, welcome to Sharper Iron.
Thank you very much.
Great. I wanted to start off by letting people kind of know who you are. So why don't you give us your basic testimony of conversion and kind of your early life.
Thank you very much. I was born in a Christian home. In fact, I can figure I'm a fifth generation Christian. When I was eight, my mother asked me if I didn't think it was about time that I went and talked to the pastor and got saved. So I did. Went forward in church, which was Wealthy Street Baptist, and at that time, David Otis Fuller was the pastor. And I remember indistinctly kneeling on the green rug in his study as he after he'd explained the plan of salvation. I received Christ. A few weeks later, I met with the deacons and must have satisfied them. And shortly after that, I received believer's baptism.
So you were born in what year?
1926.
Okay. And you're married?
Yeah. Yes, okay. Sir.
When did you get married?
Got married in 51. A moody girl. Earnest about the things of the Lord.
Moody as in the college.
Moody Bible Institute in those days, yeah. And we've not had a family, so we have a lot of kids that call us mother and dad, but none of our own.
Okay. So how did you sense God calling you into teaching ministry?
It was about my first year of college that I attended a citywide campaign in Grand Rapids. I was living in Jackson at the time, but the evangelist, whom I had probably better not name, gave an invitation for Christian service, and I went forward, and I've never doubted since then that God wanted me in some kind of Christian service. And then I graduated from seminary in 1950, had a church for 2 years, and that should have been enough to tell me that my gift was not as a pastor, but as a teacher. And I've pretty much been a teacher ever since.
Okay. Where did you go after, I guess you got your undergrad from Michigan State?
Yeah.
And then Northern Baptist Seminary in Chicago. And then where did you go after that?
Okay. After 2 years as pastor of the Community Baptist Church of Andalusia, Illinois, which was 3 blocks from the Mississippi River except in April, and then it was 1 block from the Mississippi River. You can figure that. I had a year at Grace Seminary for a THM in theology. Got the chance to meet A.J. McLean, John Whitcomb, as well as other faculty, of course, but those two, I think, made the greatest impression on me.
Any memories you have of McLean or Whitcomb?
McLean, he was about 5'4 or 5', I guess, and he had eyes like sparks. And you walk into his presence, and you're aware that you're in the presence of, humanly speaking, majesty. He's a great man, brilliant mind. Whitcomb and I have kept seeing each other off and on for the last 50 years. Mm-hmm. I very much appreciate his brilliance, his scholarship, his friendship.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you, after your THM, you went off to Columbia Bible College?
Yes, sir. Taught there 4 years.
Okay. And what are your memories of Columbia?
It was a place of great spiritual aspiration, of idealism. At that time, 45% of the graduates were headed for went to the foreign mission field, not just headed that way, but ended up on the field. And many of them in heroic service, and I count it an honor to have had a little part in such ministries as they have had. So it was a real learning experience. They had an excellent faculty, and when I knew that there were men like Hatch and Sells and Wenzel just up the hall, it put a tremendous burden on me to give it my very best shot.
How many students were at Columbia?
Oh, 300 and some, maybe nearly 400, I guess.
Okay. And then you left Columbia to go where?
We left there, my wife and I, by that time, she just got a bachelor's from there. In 57, I went with Unevangelized Fields Mission to teach in the school in Haiti, the École Évangélique de la Bible in Port-au-Prince. We were there from the spring of 58 till the fall of 59, October.
What do you remember from Haiti? What are your...
Only that it was a kind of island paradise and where every prospect pleases and only man is vile. Had a good time there. It was tough on our health. June's health really was going, and that's why I brought her back. But we were really impressed with the Haitian believers. God was doing a real work at the time. Mm. Good mission, by the way.
So left in 1960, is that right, and went to Dallas?
Came back in the fall of 59, okay. October, and expecting a church to open any time the postman came, and nothing opened. So I enrolled at Dallas the summer of 1960 under George W. Dollar, who was not just head of the history department, he was the history department. I'd known him at Columbia. And
did Dollar used to teach at Columbia?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's where I got acquainted with him.
And okay.
He finished off a doctorate at the University of Boston, Boston University. And he was my mentor at Dallas. And I had been something of a fundamentalist before that. I can still remember hearing Fuller saying, "I am a fundamentalist." But this is when I really became one, reading all that literature on the Baptist Bible Union and American Christianity.
What's your memories of Dallas in the 60s, the seminary?
Yeah, it was still crawling with fundamentalists and blue ribbon faculty, fine men. And I deeply appreciated, I didn't have many of them in class since I came in, as it were, just as born out of due time. But Pentecost, Unger, Campbell, Dollar himself, of course. And I really appreciated the year and a half of residence that I had there.
Talk to me about George Dollar for a little bit. He just passed away this past year, and obviously had an impact on your life. But a lot of people don't know much about, a lot of young guys don't know much about George.
No, and if you read his book, either one of them, The Fight for Fundamentalism, Fundamentalism in the United States, you could get the idea that if I use the word bombastic, it would seem like understatement. But as a scholar, he was top rank. And when it came to an encyclopedic knowledge of American Christianity, he had it. And deep convictions. I remember saying one time, fundamentalism is the best thing God ever did for the United States of America, and he believed it with every cell of his body. He'd come from a dirt poor background, a fishing village in New Brunswick, just north of, New Brunswick. And he got saved hearing a Gypsy Smith on the radio. And from there on, he got a passion to get an education, which he did. And I appreciated his ministry. I sat under his pastorate when we lived in Columbia. And then, of course, I knew him in Dallas. And then from there on, off and on, he was the one that became vice president of Piedmont in 1968 and got me there. So, as I say, an encyclopedic ministry, as a platform man, I'll use the word bombastic even there. He was very particular in the way I phrased my dissertation, and yet when it came to writing his own books, they exclamation points and
all caps strong, letters.
I guess not all caps.
Okay.
His
later years, he seemed to fade away from his convictions a bit. Is that accurate?
No. He, how to say this? He left Central in, I believe it was 81, and when you've got two very strong personalities like Dr. Clearwaters and Dr. Dollar, sooner or later there's going to be a collision. And so Dollar left there and ended up in Florida. I think he taught a year or two at Faithway in Ypsilanti, mm-hmm. Ended up in Florida, and I kept seeing him there anytime I was in Florida to see our stepmother-in-law. And he had finally a conference in writing ministry, but he wasn't. He did teach. He's working in rescue missions, and he had a couple of opportunities to teach in Florida.
Oh, great. Yeah. Okay, then after getting your Ph.D. in church history at Dallas, where did the path lead?
Okay, from there to Central. They were just in the process of releasing their Greek men, and so they needed both Greek and church history, and Dollar recommended my name as I was his boy. And so in the middle of my second residence year, Dallas released me to do my directed study by correspondence. So I went to Central in January of 62, taught there through the spring of 66.
Okay.
9 semesters.
And then you moved out to God's country, Denver, Colorado, huh? Yeah.
Briefly there for a year in Denver Baptist Bible College, and then briefly in a pastorate in Wisconsin until I was invited to Piedmont, where Dollar then was.
Okay, talk to me a little bit about Denver Baptist Bible College, because most people aren't aware of the history of that school.
Yeah, it traced, when I'm thinking of 1951, I believe it was organized under, I think it was Sam Bradford, the Baptist Pope of Eastern Colorado, and it had fallen kind of on hard times, and in, trying to get my dates right here now, but in 67, Bryce Augsburger was called as president, and he induced me to go out there. We were there for a year, and the school moved on to better things after I'd left, but that was as long as we were there.
It kind of, did you follow its history after that? It's kind of struggled through the 70s, and then it kind of, then it closed about the mid-80s and merged with Faith Baptist Bible College?
We went back in 1980. I was to be dean of the seminary.
Okay.
Had a good time. We had a good thing going. The only trouble was finances were always a struggle. The campus was a kind of makeshift meeting in a, of all things, a country club building. The swimming pool building had been filled in to make classroom space. The dorm was an apartment a mile away, and the students had to be bused or commuted back and forth between there. So it was an unhandy situation. And then when it began to come down in the end of the year 1980 and 81, there were about 160 students, 155. That next fall, there were 110 in the college. Still, seminary is running about 60. But that was kind of the handwriting on the wall.
But it was at its peak, how many students went to Denver Baptist Bible College?
Well, there must have been something over 200 in the college.
Okay.
The seminary ran about 65, and was doing very well, by the way.
What do you think led to its demise? Because there's a lot of theories out there. You know, one being maybe a Calvinism that was pushed but not accepted by the local churches, thus they didn't support it? Or
it didn't help anything when the school put out a leaflet with great bold letters, "We are not a hyper-Calvinist institution," which had about the same effect as Nixon saying, "I am not a crook." There's such a thing as planting suggestions, and that wasn't the best one to plant. Why did the school go down? A lack of confidence among the churches of Colorado. In fact, the chairman of the board came from Indiana, of all places, and they were not able to raise money. And with the lack of funds and then the lack of students going into the 81 school year, that was the beginning of the road down. And finally, in 86, the school merged with Faith Baptist, and that was all for it. And now what remains are records in the registrar's office in Iowa and a case of mementos in the library there at Ankeny. But it's too bad, because Kevin Bowder wrote quite a tribute one time to the way that school is going, to its faculty, to its esprit de corps. I mean, if it had kept on, let me pause. I went to the then president, whom I have the dearest of respect and love for, and I asked him, "Look, why don't you give the college anything they want to Ankeny, Iowa, and in return for that, go for broke to build the seminary, and all we ask is their name. It will be Faith Baptist Theological Seminary, which they don't have yet. And I can see him yet shaking his head and saying, no, too many dreams I have that have not yet been fulfilled. And the dreams never were fulfilled, and the final merger was the story.
So the last year of fundamental seminary education in Denver was?
85 and 86.
Okay. So then it was off to Piedmont, and you spent perhaps your longest tenure of teaching at Piedmont. Talk to me about your time there.
A good school, and it was still on the way up when we went there. Dollar was eased out, shall I say, in 1970. We went there, of course, in 68. He left in 70. And there was not the best of feeling between him and me at the time. He really felt bad that I didn't leave the same time he did, except I didn't have to have the same situation he had, and therefore I stayed on. But the new president, Donald Drake, was inexperienced but earnest and I think dedicated and idealistic, and the school had some good years. It went to a high of about 500 and a lot of strengths, a strong emphasis on foreign missions, strong emphasis on personal dedication, and I felt good about it. As of 1980, I do not know what kind of watershed it passed, but when we got invited to Denver, I was glad enough to go there.
Mm-hmm. So after your final time at Denver, you headed up to Clark Summit, right?
Yeah, I was there for 2 years.
Okay. Anything about Clark Summit that you remember?
Only that the academic level was one of real integrity. I think the best thing to me was working under John Milheim, who's the dean of the seminary, and as I say, one of the finest men I've ever worked for in my life. I really appreciated his ministry, and when they dislodged him from being dean of the seminary, I was wide open to a call, and that's when we went to Faith Baptist in Iowa.
Okay. Yeah. So you spent two seasons at Faith in Iowa? One from 1984 to 1990, and one from 95 to 97, with 5 years at Piedmont squeezed in between there. So talk to me about that journey.
Okay. By 1990, we'd been away from Piedmont for 10 years then, and the school was in financial difficulties caused mainly by the flying program, and now with a new administration and badly needing some familiar names, the former business manager and I were invited back, and I was back there for 5 years, and I think the administration pretty well did get it back on its feet, and it has gone fairly well since then. A lot of the debt has been paid off, and had a good time. We organized a seminary, that is Jack Claggett and I, and the school had a hopeful future. When I got invited back to Ankeny in 95, I was happy enough to get back at what was really an established seminary level. And then after 2 years there, we had an urgent and inviting call to come here to Clearwater Christian College. We've been here now for 9 years.
Okay. Yeah. Talk to me about Clearwater Christian College.
As Pickering said to our former president one time, do you realize that you've got the only separated, regionally accredited, liberal arts college in the country? You had to think that one over and decided maybe he was right. When it comes to a fundamentalist stand of positional and personal separation, I do not know of another liberal arts college in the country which has regional accreditation. So it's got that going for it. It recently went through a change of administration, and I believe that the current one represents, again, the kind of idealism that we can trust that God has a real future if he puts off the rapture that long.
Great. During your educational career, I guess Kevin Bowder sat at your feet for a little bit. Is that true?
That was in Denver, yes, 1980 to 82, the time we were there.
Okay. What was your experience with Bowder as a student?
Okay, and if you want it in just one word, I'll use the word brilliant. But I then and since have the highest respect for him, and I count it an honor to have had him in class.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, good. I was wondering. I sat in his class and realized he was brilliant, and I just wonder what he was like as a student. So,
yeah, God has his purposes, and I trust that God will continue to care for him and keep him, to keep things in perspective is not the easiest thing when a man has such obvious gifts, and I'm trusting and praying that God will keep him usable and useful.
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely blessed many, though, with his writings.
No doubt of it.
Whereas a lot of people haven't cultivated the discipline of writing, he's been a gift to many, I think, in that respect.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
As you look back on, 53 years, I guess, in fundamental schools, and you've been to many of them on faculty, what are some of the joys that you recall of ministry as you look back on your career?
Well, I think one thing that keeps coming back, and that is that I can see that there were certain students on whom I did have some sort of impact. And when Paul looked over his life in 1 Corinthians 4, he said, I don't even evaluate my own ministry. I'll leave that to the Lord. And any Christian worker has to do that. But I've appreciated the opportunity to have had an impact on lives. I appreciated God's protection and care. Beware when all men speak well of you. So I guess none of us have that curse of having all men speaking well of us, but at least God has been gracious, shielding us. I've appreciated the opportunity to teach and the sense that God is yet doing a work and calling out a remnant for his name. So, satisfaction. Satisfaction that as I consider the doctrines of the Word of God, the theology of biblical orthodoxy, that it still seems reasonably self-evident, and I find a lot of fellowship out there with men who hold the same values. The Word of God, Scripture, plenary verbal inspiration, inerrancy, the whole bit, a love for the Word, the doctrine of God, doctrine of Christ, doctrine of the Spirit, doctrine of the Church, human depravity, power of salvation. I mean, these things that are our meat and drink, our stock and trade, grateful that God's kept us.
Great. What are some of the sorrows, maybe, as you look back across your career?
Well, the sorrows are kind of the mirror image of the joys. And when I think of missionaries who are doing heroic service that I could never do, I'm thinking of some in the class of Hudson Taylor, couples in New Guinea, couples in Africa, and I'm humbled when I think of that. But then I think of others that looked so promising and now have gone by the wayside. One dear fellow, most promising, a missionary, a pastor, and now trying to put his marriage back together. And other men who ought to be trying to put their marriage back together, but I mean, men I thought I had an impact on, men who looked to me for counsel and advice at one time, admired my stand, and now utterly turned aside, utterly rejected it. Mm. And thank God their number's limited, but that hurts. And as I heard in a message last night, those are people you grieve over. I wish I could say I've actually shed liquid tears, but I can't quite say that, I'm afraid.
Now, you have a club foot, is that correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you obviously have had a lifelong infirmity. I talked with you about it a little bit yesterday. You make your own shoes. How has that played into your life?
Well, for one thing, it kept me out of athletics. For another thing, it kept me out of the military in World War II. For another thing, it's one of those things you live with. I have long since forgiven the surgeon who butchered me. I think of Mark Twain telling about a man who had, a publisher who had cheated him, and he said, "Now my feelings have mellowed, and if it were possible, I would gladly send him a fan." But I'm past anything like that for Dr. John T., an esteemed surgeon in Grand Rapids. But
just the surgery went bad? Or
yeah, never should have been done. Should just wrap the foot up, put it in a cast, and let it straighten out. Hmm. But Lord, what's your purpose? Lord, you've got a purpose in it, and all I can do is believe that it's what he wants.
Hmm. Yeah. What would you say are some life lessons maybe that God has taught you, a life message of Robert Delaney?
I think one is most recent, and that is the nature of a local church. And that is that when you've got a congregation trying to get along with a pastor and the two of them trying to get along with a group of men, call them a board, deacons, whatever, if they love and trust one another, it'll work. But if they can't trust one another, if you've got carnal people rather than spiritual people, then the only way it'll work is if the pastor's a dictator. And to me, that has been a helpful insight. Not that there's much I've been able to do about it, but helpful insight. And that is a place of love in the Christian life, purposing the good of others, even if they're difficult people. But I believe God's given me something in that. Hmm. I appreciate the nature of fundamentalism and the insight that there are men out there with whom I can cheerfully and humbly identify, and thank God that I can call them my friends. What else? I hope I have not lost all my youthful idealism, and that is that God deliver us from money or the love of it. I prayed years ago a prayer that I heard from Frank Sells back at Columbia. Lord, give me neither poverty nor riches. He's answered the prayer. I do not respond to the Reader's Digest sweepstakes. It's not worth the stamp on it because I know I'm not going to win. I've asked for neither poverty nor riches, but God's been gracious. Hmm. Some level of detachment.
What are some Bible texts that have been precious to you over the years? If you've taught the Bible for 53 years, I imagine some are exceedingly rich.
I think Galatians 5, well, Galatians 2, I'm crucified with Christ, but then Galatians 5, the fruit of the Spirit, and then in verse 24 when he says, "And they that are Christ's have crucified the flesh with its affections and lusts." And whatever it means to internalize that, fulfill it, I suppose I'm as far from it maybe as anybody, but at least to have that ideal, and that is that the old nature is never to be trusted. It'll never get any better. I continue to have to get on my face before God morning by morning and confess things. Mm. And the confidence that we walk by faith and not by sight. Another verse that's precious, Psalm 71, about verse 19 and 20, where David says, "Now that I'm old and gray-headed, O Lord, forsake me not until I've shown thy strength unto this generation and thy power to that which is to come." Trusting God, keep me usable.
Hmm. You're, in a few months, you'll be 80 years old. Are there, at this stage of life, after studying theology your whole life and church history your whole life, do you still have some questions that you're perusing, or some rabbits you're chasing, some learning paths maybe that you'd like to investigate some more?
Well, I'm interested in what became of the conservative Baptist movement, because when I was at Central from 62 to 66, that ferment was so thick you could cut it with a knife. And that was when the CB movement was just breaking up. And to analyze why it broke up, I think it's still fascinating. I still have a lot of ideas and a lot of diagnoses, but that's one area that I'm interested in. Go ahead.
How would you like Robert Delaney to be remembered?
Man of God.
Great. Thank you for your time.
Very gladly. Thanks for your interest.
Shh. Sharper Iron is a blog and forum whose mission is to edify Christian brothers and sisters by providing a place to publish and discuss news and ideas from a Christian, biblical, and fundamentalist worldview.